This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hello, and welcome to this week's 45th podcast. I'm here this week with Waj and Siraj. Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hello.
Waj, how's the van?
The van is toasty. I have the air conditioner on. This is my luxury office and children listening. You too one day can be a middle-aged man and have your minivan as an office
and record a podcast.
Keep dreaming. This is the only way to escape my babies who couldn't care less about sound quality or professional interviews. And I just want to say, like, there was this one moment I had to do a CNN interview on Skype, and my son was about to pull off that moment. Remember when that North Korea expert was giving that live interview and his wife came in like a ninja and just like a boss, like took the two kids who were crashing the interview, and that interview went viral? That yeah. almost happened to me. And ever since then, I'm like, you know what? I'll just risk the minivan and my pride.
So this week, or this day, there has been, as usual, a flurry of developments. But to start off, there is like how many potential wars about to start right now?
Maybe China economic war. North Korea is always there.
We'll skip the economic wars for now. The trade wars, we'll deal with later. They're easy to win after all. But in terms of actual, like, possible military uses of force, like, what is going on?
I mean, with North Korea, it seems like things haven't really moved in the direction that many in his base have, at least Trump's base, I should say, have thought it was moving in terms of denuclearization.
Yeah.
You have...
Well, we have Trump and his tweet announcement that we are still with he is still with Kim Jong-un. So hopefully that's like not a sign of like imminent war going on. But lately, North Korea has been launching a bunch of stuff.
Yeah. So they fired some short range missiles over the past week. And I think there was a self-imposed moratorium on long range missiles, certainly nuclear testing. And I used this analogy on CNN that this is much like the Chappelle Show skit where Charlie Murphy is talking about Rick James and how North Korea is a habitual line stepper. And, you know, they're constantly pushing the United States to get them to react. And this is kind of one of those deals. And Pompeo and Bolton, I think they're pretty frustrated with them right now.
But, you know, the difference is Charlie Murphy used to put Rick James in check.
Right.
Was a perpetual line steppage.
But I feel like it's moving towards that direction. We haven't fully got it there, but it has the inklings of it.
Yeah.
I don't think so. It'd be the reason why, because if Bolton, who is our warmonger national security advisor, but isn't a dumb man, even though he is reckless and bloodthirsty, and Pompeo, if they had influence and leverage over Trump, they would have kept Trump from at least tweeting what he did, which is, you know, I'm still with Kim Jong-un. And I think one thing I want to mention is, you know, you can't control all the variables. And one of the variables that exists is our allies, South Korea, Japan. Can you just imagine them for a second being absolutely terrified that Kim Jong-un is doing these missile tests and the president of the United States of America is like, I'm still with him.
Yeah.
You know, that creates uncertainty, that creates unpredictability. We also have U.S. troops in the region. And so all this undermines national security and also undermines our alliances with our allies. And you have a brutal, murderous dictator who starves his own people to create nuclear power and nuclear missiles that he's, you know, testing when he's not supposed to be testing. And the final thing I'll say is
To give some perspective, like, to back up a bit here, what North Korea is doing is very much not in the same level or category as their other types of missile testing or nuclear testing. But it was a relatively mild step that was more like a, you know, hey, look at me kind of deal.
Yeah.
And a threat, like, if we keep going this way, we might really step in that line. I have not seen Chappelle, sorry. So I'm just kind of faking an analogy here.
Whoa, Susan, you haven't seen Chappelle's show?
I've seen a couple, like, on reruns, but I do not know the sketch you're referencing.
That is, like, a staple of, you know, a lot of people's childhoods. But anyways, I would have to say, though, you know, Bernie Sanders actually said something interesting over the weekend that he doesn't fault Trump for the way things are with North Korea. He understands that it is a complex situation, and getting the North Koreans to the table and moving them in the direction of denuclearizing it would be tough, I think, for any president. I think it's kind of amazing that Trump has gotten this far without.
Where's he gotten? But no. Where has he gotten?
Well, he went from hurling insults and threatening nuclear war to not, which I
okay,
guess
so he made a problem and then he stopped the problem or like mitigated it. That's not getting anywhere. That's just like stopping his own, you know.
Well, that was the one thing people were worried about the most when it came to Trump was him being unpredictable. And I think, I mean, I've been critical of Trump on this quite a bit. I thought, you know, there's certain things that the North Koreans are trying to take advantage of the U.S. in terms of, you know, relieving economic sanctions. Trump walked away from the table in Vietnam.
We don't know who walked
year.
Away. I mean, we know someone walked away. We don't know it was Trump.
What do you, I mean, why does that matter? He didn't make a deal.
Yeah, but we don't know if it's because that he was the one who called it off or if Kim Jong-un's the one driving the bargain.
Given how North Korea has nothing to lose, you can imagine that
they have
Trump
so much to lose. They really
what,
like.
What do they have to lose? They
rule
only
of
test
the country.
Nuclear weapons, huh?
The rule of the country.
Their survival is based on having nuclear weapons. Without nuclear weapons, we can completely wipe them out.
Yeah.
The reason why Kim Jong Un has run circles around Donald Trump on this, and it's been really pathetic and embarrassing for the United States of America, is Donald Trump in his attempt, because he's attempting, right, to say, okay, if I befriend him and if I show him that, like, listen, I'm willing to talk to him, that somehow my personal charisma will lead to some, you know, reform. It hasn't happened yet. What's happened instead is that North Korea and Kim Jong-un have been given a mainstream national platform, an international platform. What's happened also is that Donald Trump in Hanoi literally said that he takes Kim Jong-un's word over facts and his own intelligence agencies when it came to the death of U.S. student Otto Warmbier. Let's not forget
That's no surprise there. I agree. That's probably one of the more embarrassing parts of his foreign policy is that he takes the words of foreign leaders over his own intelligence agencies.
I mean, we have taken the norms and sunk them so low that now we are praising Trump for being incompetent, but not genocidal. You know what I'm saying? Because like about a year and a half ago, it was like the red button, the button off between Kim Jong-un and Trump, right? Rocket Man. And now we've gone from Rocket Man to, oh, he's my guy. And now we've gone to, oh, I take his word over intelligence agencies, which then sets the precedent. If you're a U.S. citizen, I was talking to a North Korea expert in the waiting room of NPR 2 days ago. And she is an American citizen who was a reporter, used to go to North Korea all the time. But just think about it. If Trump takes the side of Kim Jong-un over Otto Warmbier and U.S. law enforcement, what confidence do any of us have as U.S. citizens that if we go to North Korea for any reason whatsoever and we are killed and tortured, that President Trump will have our back? And this is why Kim Jong-un is winning. He's been given an international platform. He has been given relevance. He stands side by side next to Trump, who then praises him.
Yeah.
And also our allies are rattled and our alliances with our allies, which are still strong, are shaking. Yeah. And like you said, Suraj, all that Kim Jong-un has is the nuclear power. That's all he has. He has nothing else. Like it's like a rotten, corrupt, dying regime.
Yeah.
He's literally serving his own people, but he still seems to be getting the upper hand.
Yeah. Well, so here's what we know. Under the Trump administration, North Korea is definitely better off than it was before. It's definitely improved standing. That by itself is not necessarily a bad thing, but the question is if the U.S. is also better off. And there's so far no evidence of that actually having happened. Now, we are better off than we were in 2017. And I don't know if y'all saw a few weeks ago, it was kind of flew by fast, when the former Secretary of Defense acknowledged that he'd like ignored orders from Trump. About
Jim Mattis.
Yeah, including orders about North Korea, which I kind of want some more elaboration on that, especially remembering those articles that came out in like 2017, like saying, oh, we're about to pull everyone out of South Korea. Nothing ever happened, obviously, so there was a question of the sourcing of those articles, but it's hard not to wonder if that was not correlated to whenever Mattis was ignoring orders from Trump. So, okay, we are better off than we were then.
The interesting thing about Mattis is, as soon as he left the administration, there are many Trump supporters who thought he was an establishment figure and sort of a turncoat. And this is interesting. I think a lot of people who were witnessing the beginning of his administration, a lot of people thought of Mattis as the adult in the room, and kind of seeing him in outside of the public sector, outside of the Department of Defense, it kind of him using his conscience to basically rebuked Trump on certain orders. I think the transgender military ban was one of them. I gather from what you're mentioning, Susan, that the South Korea, the U.S. military exercises was another.
We don't know exactly what it was involved, but yeah, well, something to do with North Korea.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, this probably will get into the larger discussion that we have coming up in a bit, but it seems like Mattis obviously was not the only one who sort of didn't do what Trump wanted. And in some ways it helped Trump, in many ways it didn't. And so that's kind of what led to, I guess, the Mueller report.
So unfortunately, Rabia is not here. I'm stuck with y'all non-cat having losers.
My wife is a cat fanatic.
Wait, you have cats?
No, we don't. They have like 30 cats in Florida. It's disgusting.
My mom's got a cat.
Okay, well, y'all both should like get a cat so you can be contribute more to the 45th podcast. Just saying. I will say that Siraj is a really cute dog. That's Birdie. Good. It's not as good as having a cat, but it's a pretty cute dog.
He's like a cat.
But for those of us who do have cats, we know that it's not always awesome. There's the whole issue of the litter box, which is definitely like the one not great part about cats. You know, after the 6 a.m. wake ups for food.
I mean, I recall back in the day growing up with my cat having to change the kitty litter. It's
no fun.
Quite the pain.
But that's why I'm so grateful I switched to Pretty Litter, because Pretty Litter has made my life as a cat owner way easier in a lot of different ways. So Pretty Litter is convenient. It's mailed to your door. It's lighter than regular litter. It's quick, clean, super absorbent. The smell is gone. But it's also amazing because of what it does in terms of your cat's health. Pretty Litter changes color to detect certain underlying illnesses before urgent medical care is needed, saving you money, stress, and potentially your cat's life. For me, that's amazing because my older cat, Ghost, has recently had some kidney issues. We switched her to a better diet. We've, you know, taken steps to address that, but we know it's a problem that could come up again. So knowing that if it did happen, I'd be able to tell from her litter box right away and get her in before it got worse is such a peace of mind.
What's up, Ghost?
Is hanging in there, and she used her Pretty Litter to help her hang around.
So do what Susan and Rabia did and make the switch to Pretty Litter today by visiting prettylitter.com and use promo code 45th for 20% off your first order. That's prettylitter.com, promo code 45th.
That's prettylitter.com, promo code 45th. So, aside from the North Korea issue, as I mentioned in the start of the episode, it seems like we have, like, possible, like, potential wars popping up all over. But the two biggest ones that seem, well, there's, of course, Venezuela, which has been ongoing. But then in the last few days, there's been some weird stuff going on with Iran.
Yep, that's the big one. That's John Bolton's desire for the last 20 years for a regime change. And let's see if he's going to get the Iran war that he always wanted. It's very interesting. Apparently, according to the White House, which released a statement over the weekend, the United States is deploying the USS Abraham Lincoln aircraft carrier strike group to the Persian Gulf. The aim is, to quote, to send a clear and unmistakable message to the Iranian regime that any attack on the U.S. interest or on those of our allies will be met with unrelenting force, end quote. That's comforting.
Oh, God.
But what's it based on? We know is that Pompeo had some meetings set up. Like today, he was going to visit with Angela Merkel. And then suddenly that was canceled, and now he's flying off to nowhere really knows where. He's going to Russia or possibly Israel. This was all happening as I was preparing for the episode today, and I do not know where we stand now. But there's something going on.
Iran in particular, this has been the desire for...
But like, with Pompeo today, like, where is he going? Like, what the hell was that all about? Anyone seen any updates? I mean, this is like developing right now as we're recording,
I did see something from CNN reporter Caitlin Collins about how the reporters who are following Pompeo might not actually be allowed to report where they are until after they leave. So I imagine it's a security risk.
Oh, it's probably going disclose. To like a war zone, isn't he?
It might be Iraq or it might be Afghanistan. I mean, Trump had a lot of issues trying to get to Iraq.
Yeah, that's probably what it is.
Holidays,
then.
So it might be one of those two.
But
now is quote pressing issues, but we really don't, you know.
That's kind of concerning. Quote. Like, why is he canceling a meeting with Germany to like go jet set off to Iraq or somewhere like on short notice for immediate pressing global security issues? Is this some kind of like prelude to whatever intelligence they're claiming supports the aggressive measures against Iran?
Well, I'm not 100% sure. That's the thing, is when you're outside of government, it's only until you find out after the fact that you really understand what went on when it was happening. I mean, yeah. The whole, even when they got bin Laden in 2011, where was Obama was at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and they were basically right after his appearance, they went right into basically the war room to observe.
Planned. They knew that was happening. We know now, and this is all, so maybe tomorrow, when this gets released, we'll have answers. But it is very strange to see Pompeo cancel a planned meeting with Merkel to go off to, like, first talk to Lavrov and at some point, and now this. So it does seem like it's related to Iran, which makes us wonder.
Where are you getting information that he's talking to Lavrov?
That was some of the reporting earlier today.
All I've seen is pressing issues. I haven't seen any details. So I don't know what the pressing issue is, but it is concerning that you would, you know, randomly cancel a meeting with Merkel.
Oh, I apologize. So the Lavrov thing is, he's now announcing that's coming up in a few days. So we don't know, still don't know where he went off to after canceling Germany.
Yeah, so we don't know what the pressing issue is as of yet, as of this recording. But when it comes to Iran, I think we should be, you know, it's not fear-mongering to be deeply concerned, because it's let's not forget that Donald Trump and his administration pulled out of the successful Iran nuclear deal that was once opposed by hawks and Republicans, but even Mattis, right? But then once you saw it implemented, people like, it might not be perfect, but this is the best diplomatic option moving forward. United States pulled out of it. The Iran nuclear deal is still ongoing with other foreign nations, so it weakened our hand. Number two, I think it was just recently where we declared the Revolutionary Guard Corps of Iran as a terrorist organization, which then made them respond by saying, well, every U.S. troop in the Middle East is a terrorist organization. And we're seeing overtures by Iran to the United States to get back in the nuclear deal. But you also have to realize is that this, you know, regime change in Iran is like the wet dream of Bolton and others, right? Which is why we support MBS of Saudi Arabia, because he's also against Iran, which is also why Donald Trump openly says, right, we support Saudi Arabia and other countries because we want to do sanctions on Iran and anyone who does business with Iran. So this has been one of the major foreign policy goals of this Trump administration and of John Bolton in particular. So we should be very concerned about a potential regime change, potential war, or I hope maybe just because it's Ramadan, I'll do a Ramadan prayer, that maybe just maybe they might actually seek diplomatic relations with the mullahs.
Here's the one thing I have to say, just pushing back a little bit on the idea that Trump wants war. He ran on a campaign of getting us out of foreign intervention. I think he hasn't really done a good job handling Afghanistan and Iraq in terms of pulling troops out. I think one of those things is that you don't know what it's like to be in a combat zone until you're sitting in the president's seat and you have to give the orders. But I would be very hard pressed to find that Trump actually wants to upgrade the military escalation outside of just sending an aircraft carrier over to the Persian Gulf. I know he wants to send a message, but to full on invasion of Iran and regime change, unless they do it, you know, quick and clean and, you know, get out of there, and I can't see that happening.
So I agree with a qualified agreement there, to the extent that Trump himself personally does not seem to have the same enthusiasm, which, you know, is probably a given, because I can't imagine another human being having the same enthusiasm that Bolton has.
George W. Bush.
Human being has that kind of enthusiasm compared to him.
Yeah, I mean, George Bush and his administration had a plan to go into Iraq, and it was 9/11 that gave them the public support to go do it.
But Trump also ran on a platform of make Mexico pay for the wall. So it doesn't mean necessarily that he's not.
But that's not the same as going to war.
Well, but here's the other point. He's not fully in control of this. He has Pompeo and Bolton, who have their own agendas and clearly are not always listening to what the boss man says.
If the United States is attacked by Iran or any other adversary or North Korea, President Trump will probably have the public support to go to war against one of those countries. I don't think he's going to initiate war on his own.
So just tying it all together, I think, you know, Bolton, Pompeo and others have had this inclination forever. Now, it will probably run up against Trump, but at the same time, you also have to see what the Trump administration has done and has openly said. It has openly supported, you know, that's why they're doing the sanctions. Yeah, that's why they're aligning themselves with Saudi Arabia, in part amongst other, you know, financial lucrative deals. That's why one of the reasons we're aligned with Netanyahu's government is they want a regime change. Now, that doesn't mean a full out.
Every administration before Trump was aligned with Israel and aligned with Saudi Arabia. Name me one administration in our lifetime that wasn't aligned with them.
But you haven't done this type of reckless escalation of pulling out of a diplomatic Iran nuclear deal, doing these types of sanctions, threatening to sanction people, allies even, who still do business with Iran, and at the same time sending a U.S. carrier, and at the same time having straight-up warmongers like John Bolton, who has been itching for this. Not itching for it. He has been.
Yeah, he's written about it in 2015, about the only way to stop the Iran nuclear threat is to bomb the hell out of them. I understand.
Yeah, and you were also not incorrect in that it could run up against Trump's instincts, right? And we've also seen, I think this is fair to say, that this is not the most, how does one say, competent, effective, efficient administration. Sometimes the left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing. So this could also be John Bolton's push. Or
right, that's absolutely that could absolutely be the case.
So on a related note, has anyone seen Kushner's peace plan yet?
Middle East peace plan? No, that's very that's under wraps quite a bit.
Like, I really hope like step one isn't like start a war in Iran.
Well, from my understanding, the AP reported that Kushner is actually presenting his immigration plan this week to GOP lawmakers.
Oh, so the peace plan got away.
That's what they're prioritizing first. And I guess the peace plan will come, from what I'm hearing, in the summer, probably in June at the very earliest.
And how about the entrepreneurship plan? That'd be nice, too.
Which one?
I mean, wasn't he going to help entrepreneurship? And then he's also helping the Middle East peace plan, and now he has an immigration plan. I mean, that boy wonder, Jared Kushner. So talented.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, just a month ago when, you know, Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen was fired, basically, and replaced with Kevin McAleen. And, you know, a lot of news outlets were reporting that Stephen Miller was the one behind it. And he's sort of like growing in influence. Why isn't he the one presenting this immigration plan? It seems to be in Kushner's lap.
Or people like, hey, the real power here is Miller. So Trump got pissed, maybe.
Well, yeah, it could be. I mean, if there was going to be an immigration plan presented, wouldn't it have been done by his immigration guy, Miller?
I mean, if he thought Miller's getting too big for his britches, I can see him passing it off to Kushner. But yeah, I don't recall Kushner being like the lead boy here.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, I can't fully say what's happening in terms of the circle of trust, but maybe.
But also, no one likes Miller. No one wants to make him the face of anything.
That's what I'm saying. I think it's mostly optics.
Yeah.
Because they realize Stephen Miller is so toxic that Jared Kushner is less toxic.
He's certainly more optically inclined.
But even if we may, like, real quick, just we're talking about the Middle East and, you know, foreign policy and potential wars, this Middle East peace process is DOA. Because first and foremost, let's not forget that Trump administration moved the embassy to Jerusalem, which Palestinians consider the site of their future capital. Well, SOL Palestinians. And Trump administration said the Golan Heights, which the entire world recognizes as occupied territory, is now Israeli-controlled territory. And Netanyahu won again. And Netanyahu's Likud party doesn't consider the West Bank occupied. They consider it part of Judea and Samaria. And so as everyone is moving more towards the right, and you have Jared Kushner, who has ties to the settlements in the West Bank, and you have the U.S. ambassador to Israel, who is so far right that he might be even more right than Netanyahu. What peace plan, guys? There's no peace plan.
I'm just saying, I'm hoping step one ain't whatever Pompeo's doing over the Middle East right now.
I mean, if they're presenting a peace plan in an upcoming election cycle, it's got to be pretty bold. And I honestly don't know what is entailed in it. But it sounds like it would, if anything, present a two-state solution, which seems to be the preferred policy proposal in Israel. Yeah, I think a one-state solution is more on the side of like BDS and a lot of liberals who, you know, prefer that. So honestly, with Hamas in the picture, and I think with Netanyahu being reelected, that's going to be a very difficult thing for them to achieve. But if they get it, I mean, certainly credit to them. But, you know, I mean, you guys have been around the block probably longer than I have and understand that peace in the Middle East is such a, you know, distant, frail, you know, such a distant.
I mean,
thought.
We're not looking for instant peace here. We're just looking to not have a war in Iran by next week. So,
yeah,
we'll
I will just say, Trump has been like a bull in a china shop who has only broken a few dishes instead of wrecked the entire store.
I mean, let's hope this is not one he's going to knock off the shelf. But moving domestically for a bit, let's turn to the non-literal wars and go on to Trump's evolving war against congressional oversight.
It's time for spring cleaning. Quip's got an easy way to start with your brushing habits. Just 2 minutes twice a day can help pave the way to a healthier mouth and mind. And now the whole family can get refreshed with Quip. The new Kids Quip has the same 2 minute timer and guiding pulses as our original version, with no childish gimmicks, so they can brush just like a grown-up.
So, Waj, you're the resident expert here. How hard is it to get kids to brush their teeth?
It is next to impossible, but if you have an excellent toothbrush like Quip, then they actually get excited and they have clean mouths and they go to the dentist and they get lollipops.
Sounds like a win-win-win. So with kids, for the new Quip Kids, it's the same brush as their original version, but it's tweaked down for smaller mouths.
Also, the Quip toothbrushes have the sonic vibrations, and I could tell you, kids love it. And so people who brush too hard sometimes have electronic toothbrushes that are too abrasive, but not with Quip. It's actually very gentle on sensitive gums. And its built-in 2 minute timer pulses every 30 seconds to remind you when to switch sides and help you to clean your whole mouth every day.
And there are multi-use covers that works at a stand, mounts to mirrors, and slides over your bristles to pack and protect your Quip on the go. Plus, there are no wires or a clunky charger, and it runs for 3 months on a single charge.
So trick your kids into doing what they need to do in the first place by switching to Quip.
I mean, that's why Waj loves Quip and why over 1 million happy, healthy mouths do as well. Quip starts at just $25, and if you go to getquip.com/45th right now, you can get your first refill pack for free. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/45th.
Stonewall, Stonewall, Stonewall. He's going to do that for the next 2 years. He's not going to give up anything. And what's interesting is the U.S. public, in part, elected Democrats in a historic blue wave, slight tsunami midterm election for accountability and oversight. And if you look at the polls, even Republicans actually want oversight and accountability over this presidency. But the problem is that Democrats are like the Starks or like Tyrion. And
Hold on. I am getting caught up on Game of Thrones right now. So if you drop any spoilers, I will.
Ned dies.
I know about that. I'm on season 5.
Yeah, but don't. This is going to be spoiler free. Look, Republicans are like Cersei, right? So what I mean by that is like Democrats bring a butter knife to a gunfight and Republicans bring a bazooka and a dragon killer. And so the fact that like they're still threatening, like we're going to threaten you.
The thing is, there's limited options what they can do here. I mean, let's start with the current, like the more concrete disputes.
We know that
we have Trump like saying whenever it happened a few weeks back, he's going to fight all subpoenas. So it is an across the board sort of resistance here. But there are a few hotspots right now in terms of his noncompliance with congressional oversight, starting with Barr.
So, yeah, from Politico, they're reporting that the House Judiciary Committee will proceed with a vote to hold Attorney General William Barr in contempt of Congress on Wednesday. Chairman Jerry Nadler, a Democrat from New York, confirmed on Monday that the Justice Department will, as they attempt to fend off any effort of a negotiating session with the Democratic-led committee on Tuesday, they're basically dangling the idea of holding Barr in contempt of Congress for refusing any subpoena of handing over a fully unredacted Mueller report and instead only sending them like a lightly redacted one, which is a little less redacted than the one that's available to the public, but still not completely unredacted. And so Nadler has this firm stance. He's basically seeking this punitive action against the attorney general for defying a subpoena. And it seems like a last ditch effort to sort of get Barr to negotiate with them. And last week, he appeared before the Senate Judiciary Committee, which is chaired by Senator Lindsey Graham, who has in the recent couple of years become somewhat of a Trump acolyte. But he didn't show up for the House Judiciary Committee hearing. And there's a pretty good chance he might be the second attorney general within the past decade to be held in contempt of Congress, the previous one being Eric Holder.
Yeah.
Yeah, Nadler's threat is Wednesday, right, Suraj? He said it's going to happen Wednesday?
Yeah, the vote's going to happen on Wednesday.
And this is kind of one part of sort of, well, now a three-part issue going on. And the other two parts are Don McGahn and Mueller himself, both of whom, obviously, Congress wants to have come testify before them. And in terms of Don McGahn, he's a former White House legal counsel who resigned, what, January? I can't remember. But he's the one who cooperated extensively with Mueller.
McGahn?
Yeah.
McGahn resigned after Kavanaugh was confirmed in October of 2018.
It all blurred together. And he cooperated extensively with Mueller's investigation. He's the source of much of the evidence of Trump committing obstruction of justice. And there's
alleged. Alleged obstruction.
He committed
of justice.
Come on. I'm not even pretend that because it's so obvious. Alleged
obstruction.
It's not
justice.
Alleged. It's the findings
of
fact.
Let's be technical here, okay? I will agree that there probably was obstruction that occurred, but for the sake of, you know, clarity, it's alleged.
Well, you can say that. I'm not going to. Anyway, McGahn.
Three word. Sir Holt interview. Moving on.
McGahn is was supposed to come to the Hill to testify. And of course, Trump is not going to have it. So today we had Sarah Sanders. I don't know why I still talk to her, given that she's a liar and is admitted to being a liar. She said that in terms of the McGahn testimony, quote, I don't anticipate that takes place. In other words, they consider, quote, the case closed and are moving forward to do the work of the American people. So they're just telling McGahn not to show up, not to bring his papers, and not to go testify on the Hill. Again, that's not what the executive branch gets to do. They can invoke executive privilege if they want to. It has its own complications, and they haven't even done that here.
Susan, they did an hour ago. The White House invoked executive to bar McGahn from complying with the subpoena.
So I went and got lunch, and they freaking preempted me. Okay. Well, they have now apparently declared executive privilege, which is very interesting, and I'd love to know more about that. We'll have to wait for next week to see more detail. Do you know what part did they invoke it on?
Let me quote you. The White House provided these records to Mr. McGahn in connection with its cooperation with the special counsel's investigation and with the clear understanding that the records remain subject to the total control of the White House for all purposes. The White House records remain legally protected from disclosure under longstanding constitutional principles because they implicate significant executive branch confidentiality interests and executive privilege.
That's not invoking executive privilege.
Good luck. It's a stretch. This is a massive stretch. This is Stretch Armstrong type of stretch.
That's a threat to invoke it. That's not invoking it. So we'll still have to wait.
According to the headlines now, it invoked the privilege. And this is both Washington Post and New York Times.
It says certain hypothetical things may be covered by executive privilege. They have not specified like what exactly it is. And they're not even saying it's just that. They're hedging their bet and saying some kind of unnamed imaginary confidentiality concern justifies not obeying process of law. But that's not...
White House counsel sent this in a letter to the House Judiciary Committee and said that the committee needed to send a request to the White House. And I think you're right. It hinted they would assert privilege to block the information.
But they haven't done it yet. Okay. Anyway, we have...
But it's heading down that path.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I mean, eventually they'll have to. They've been threatening to do it for so long and gotten away with not testifying to so much based on the specter of it.
A question, though, for the group. Is there any way that Mueller would not testify if he's subpoenaed?
I mean, that's another
show now. Could the DOJ block him?
So that's what Sanders said today, is that she is going to, or that the White House is going to move forward to block Mueller from testifying. Now, I am extremely unclear what specific method they plan to use to do that. They were not, so far there's been no like concrete statement of how this would happen, but Sanders did say that they would be doing that in some fashion, which makes no sense.
All of this is a legal stretch. But the fact is we should not underestimate Trump administration's ability to stretch it and do anything within their power to keep McGahn in particular and Mueller from testifying. Because as you were mentioning, Susan, McGahn spent 30 hours with Mueller. And he gave him really damning information.
Yeah, that's the thing, is McGahn was probably the most damaging to Trump's presidency than any other person.
And the best thing for it, because he stopped him from firing Mueller, which may have actually.
Yeah, and that's what's crazy. But even then, I mean, the argument that has come up is even if they were going to indict President Trump of obstruction of justice, the DOJ has a policy in which they do not indict a sitting president of the United States. So how exactly was that going to go? I mean, were they going to refer Trump for impeachment and then hope to get him indicted after that? Because impeachment obviously is a political process, not a legal one.
Well, if we wanted to repair current special counsel's regulations, we would have an explicit mechanism by which they could refer a president for impeachment. We don't have that, which is why Mueller's report is what it is, which is basically a very clear, intensively detailed description of several counts of obstruction but no charges coming
in. Yeah, because I understand both of you are lawyers, so you understand this probably better than I do. But with respect to, you know, Mueller going with the conclusion that he could not make a determination and couldn't clear Trump of any wrongdoing.
No, he did not. He did not conclude that he did not make a determination.
That's what I'm saying. He did not clear Trump of any wrongdoing.
No, he did not say he didn't reach a determination. He said he could not say what his determination was.
Yeah,
because right, that's what I'm saying is he went with the latter of saying he could not reach a determination.
Because... No. He never said he couldn't reach a determination. He said he couldn't say what a determination was. That's an important difference because it's not saying that he couldn't reach a conclusion. It's saying if he reached a conclusion and the conclusion was Trump committed a crime, he could not say that.
Oh, you lawyers and your terminology.
No, that's an important distinction. That's what he said. He was very clear.
I'm totally messing. I understand what you're saying.
It's because Mueller is basically respecting the existing guidelines. And based on the existing guidelines, he decided that he was keep his role limited. And the entire Mueller report, if you actually read it from that lens, is a punt to Congress to essentially do the right thing. In this case, the right thing would be impeachment and investigation.
Because but is it the smart thing?
It doesn't matter
to me.
He's a company man. He plays it by the book. So he goes, okay, I'll play it by the book. And it's not my role to make this determination, and I'm going to comply with the guidelines. And so, hey, Congress and the American public, look at this 450-page report where I've given you at least 10 instances.
Not 10. He did a couple of them out.
Okay, so like several instances of obstruction of justice. And by the way, let me point out that Russia has interfered in the 2016 election, and I have indicted, nearly 36 people, and they seem to have tilted towards Trump. And by the way, there's enough here for you to investigate. Please go do your job. And some people are knocking Mueller, and I understand why they want him to do more, but he probably didn't want to politicize his role further than it's already been politicized, and he wanted to stick within the guidelines that exist right now, which is why he did what he did.
Well, the end result is we all have to speculate about this because Mueller is letting everyone else speak for him. And by everyone else, I mean Barr. Here's the showdown that's coming for us is whether Barr and his testimony last week was accurate when he described his conversations with Mueller.
No, of course not. Well, I mean, that's the problem, right? That goes back to my analogy of Game of Thrones, like Starks versus Cersei, is that you see Mueller and others, like you see Mueller's and McGann, and you see even like, you know, FBI Director Wray, who again today said that, you know, FBI did not spy. That was the word that Barr used. And you see many Democrats and Biden expecting and hoping that Republicans do the right thing. They're expecting and hoping the Trump administration does the right thing. And again and again and again, what do? They're Cersei. And I think this is going to come to the point where Mueller, in order to save the integrity of his report, will either have to testify or, like I predicted earlier today, there's going to be a lot of leaks over the next 2 months. A lot.
The other avenue that they could go down, and this is the DOJ under Barr, who's kind of prioritizing this, is investigating the investigators. You know, during the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing, at least this past week, Barr doubled down on the claim that the Trump campaign was spied on by the Obama administration, or at least the FBI and DOJ. And in this last couple of days, former Director of National Intelligence James Clapper actually told Wolf Blitzer in an interview that there was basically what Barr's definition of spying meets the dictionary definition of spying.
Well, who cares what spying means? We already know. We've known for a long time about the efforts that were done in response to when Downer kicked this all off. And that was already investigated by the IG, the Inspector General for the DOJ. So they do keep sounding this horn here of investigators, but there really isn't a lot left for them to do there. So they can bring it up all like again and again.
Well, what they're really investigating is where the source of all those leaks. And that's the thing that they're trying to basically.
But it's not what the end game really is, not an investigation. What it is a very deliberate and I think smart for Trump plan to smear law enforcement and create this deep state conspiracy that makes the American public lose trust in these institutions. And as such, then it becomes my word versus your word, left versus right. And it creates a cloud of suspicion, you know, trust no one. It's like a Russia. It's like an authoritarian play. It's like what authoritarian leaders always do. I'm the leader. Trust me. I have your interest. No one else can be trusted. Law enforcement are, quote, scum. According to Donald Trump, there's a deep state conspiracy, which is hilarious considering most of the FBI is Republican conservative. And if there was a conspiracy, don't you think they would have outed the fact to the American public before the election that, by the way, there's a counterintelligence investigation into this. No. Instead, what James Comey did, who was, by the way, a Republican 11 days before the election, is talk about Hillary Clinton and her emails. And so if you kind of just like step back for a second and logically think about it, the alleged deep state law enforcement actually helped Trump. Obama helped Trump. He wanted to tell the American people about it, but Mitch McConnell stopped him. You guys remember that?
Yeah.
He stymied Obama from talking about this. And so all the institutions kind of helped Trump by not revealing the fact there was a legitimate FBI investigation into alleged potential cooperation between people in Trump's orbit and Russia and the Russia hack of our 2016 elections. And most of these people are Republicans. And the fact that these people are now the deep left, deep state conspiracy out to get Trump is comical, but that's what he's doing. He wants to rile up the base, 35%. And I've said this before, I'll say it again on this podcast. I believe if he loses, he won't leave.
Yeah.
And he's creating the specter of uncertainty and saying that everyone is against me. Everything is rigged. Trust my word over everyone else. And he has 35% of the public. He has a Republican Party. And he has the entire right-wing media infrastructure.
Well, our way of determining like what factual reality is, or one of the ways traditionally in America it's been done, is through congressional oversight. And that is one reason why he is trying to basically end the whole practice of it. If people in his administration can't be questioned, they can't give answers. And if people can't go under oath and be testifying the things that they presumably know and are obligated to say accurately or be charged with perjury, like that, this is how our system works to establish certain facts. And without that, it'll be left with a war of he said, she said. Okay, so Rabia is not here this week, but every time we do a ritual ad, I have to like stop Rabia from going off before we start recording about how awesome ritual is, because she freaking loves this stuff. And now, in part due to her, I love it too, because ritual is the obsessively researched vitamin for women. Ritual's essentials have the nutrients that most of us don't get from our food. And it's all in their clean, absorbable form. No shitty additives or ingredients that can do more harm to your body than good. Just 2 easy capsules a day provide the nutrients that you need to support a strong foundation for your health. From D3 to omega-3, Ritual's Essentials for Women helps fill in the gaps in a woman's diet. Their no-nausea capsule design is gentle on an empty stomach, and there's a mint tab in every bottle to keep things fresh, so you don't get that fishy aftertaste that's common with most omega-3s. Plus, Ritual's delivered, so it's super easy. A subscription is easy to start. And it's easy to snooze on it too. It's only $1 a day to have all the essential nutrients that your body needs delivered every month. No strings attached. Better health doesn't happen overnight. And right now, Ritual's offering our listeners 10% off during your first 3 months. So fill in the gaps in your diet with Essential for Women, a small step that helps support a healthy foundation for your body. Visit ritual.com/45th to start your ritual today. That's 10% off during your first 3 months at ritual.com/45th. The other area where there's been a recent like confrontation that came to a head, although it's been kind of bubbling for months now, has to do with Trump's tax returns. Ever since the Democrats took the House, they could request them. They finally did. And of course, the Treasury, Mnuchin, was like, that's not going to happen. And he finally formally recorded his no answer in a letter yesterday, day before, where he said that in reliance on DOJ guidance that has not yet been written down but will be eventually, he is not going to hand over the tax returns of Donald J. Trump.
And now you have House and Ways and Means Committee Chairman Richard Neal consulting with the Justice Department, basically trying to get those tax returns. And Trump is basically saying that the request for his tax returns is an invasion of his privacy. And he still contends that he's still under audit, which at this point, I don't really believe anymore, but
it doesn't matter anyway. So, well, the statute is very clear here. It's under 6103F, what there's certain groups that can request anyone's tax returns. And one of those is the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee at the House. Now, for other people who entities want to request records, there are some qualifications that are kind of built into the language of the statute, some kind of hedging, like must be for a certain purpose. But for this request from the Ways and Means Committee, there is no such qualification. The only restriction is that if they request records of a certain identifiable person, it has to be through a closed session. So it can't be like a public hearing. But that's the only restriction. There's no other restriction whatsoever. It's a law. It says the Treasury, whoever has the records, shall produce them. So whatever legal argument the DOJ and Mnuchin came up with, which I've not revealed yet, it's hard to see what it could be based on because there's just no textual predicate for it.
There's also, I guess, Trump seems to be arguing this point that just because he was elected in 2016 without revealing his tax returns, that he could do it again. He could get reelected again without having to reveal his tax returns.
But that doesn't mean he can like disregard the law that says if the Ways and Means Committee wants them, it gets them.
I feel like Trump is in this position where he just, I mean, like, I know it's Ramadan and I shouldn't be swearing, but he just doesn't give a fuck to some things. And this is just
one of those areas. That's one of the things he does not give a fuck about.
One of those areas, he just really does not care. And when it comes to the Democrats in the House trying to get him to cooperate, I don't think he fully really understands the ramifications about the oversight of Congress into his administration and how politically damaging it could be. But
I think he does. Time, I think that's why he's decided that the take care clause and rule of law are meaningless to him.
Well, I was just going to say at the same time, and this kind of, I know Wudge was making this point about, you know, trust in our institutions. He's making this all about being another political witch hunt, another witch hunt by Democrats, just like with the Mueller report, just like everything, every other effort that Democrats have tried to go against Trump, trying to get his tax returns is one of those things that he can easily spin and make it sound like the Democrats are just in it for politics and for damaging him in 2020.
But that's the thing, like, it's, oversight is politics inherently.
No, I understand that, but yeah. I'm saying they're, it's purely for political gain and not for, like, say, government transparency, which is something I think most people would agree with. But yeah,
it is for transparency, too. Like, just because that you have, I mean, without politicians having motives to do things, they wouldn't do them. And transparency is something they're politically motivated to accomplish.
I'm saying I agree with you. I think government transparency is, everybody should care about that. And it just so happens that when the shoe is one on one foot, people seem to care about it. And when it's on the other foot, say with like Trump being in office, that regard goes out the window.
Yeah. I mean, of course, that's human nature when something happens to your side to feel one way. But this is going beyond that because he's actively refusing to abide by any part. He's not playing the game of I'll abide by this much because the laws. He's just flat out not obeying any of it. And this is why it's so important. Here's an example for his tax returns and his income and his business. Right now we have something going on with Venezuela, you know, a little bit of a, I don't even know the word for it, teetering on the edge of intervention, or at least trying to stage a coup over there.
A lot of political and civil unrest to start with.
So the American interest there is evolving. Now, on the other hand, you have Trump, who has towers all over the world, including one in Uruguay, which was financed in very large percentage by Venezuelan money. And for Trump's towers, how they usually work and how they work for this tower in particular is people put up money, half the money up front. They buy a unit in this tower that's being built. And when the tower is finally built, they pay the rest of the money and they get their unit. So we now know that there's numerous Venezuelans who owe millions and millions of dollars to Trump, a tower that will become due whenever the tower gets finished, 2020, presumably. So yeah, we have a president who has a distinct monetary interest in Venezuela and its sanctions and no way of investigating it.
Are you saying that the people who have financed the tower in Uruguay are primarily on the side of Juan Guaido?
We don't know. We have no idea. No. That's the problem.
We have no idea. It's just Venezuelan dark money.
Venezuelan dark money. And we don't know, for instance, I mean, whatever side they're on, Trump has a direct financial interest in seeing them to be financially able to make that payment. So, yeah, that's a conflict with what he's doing over there right now. And we deserve to know what other motivations he has. On his sanction list, does he sanction people or not sanction people because they might owe him money?
I'm curious, though. And this is just me thinking, if Trump is trying to be, obfuscating the truth and trying to say one, the sky is black, but it's actually blue, that he's looking at, say, if he has dark money funding Venezuelan towers, towers in Uruguay, by Venezuelan dark money, would he necessarily put that in his tax returns?
I'm saying it's not, the tax return itself probably wouldn't, we don't even know. I mean,
I just feel like there's when it comes to Trump, there's just so much that I can't think that look, I don't think he's like the brightest guy, but he's not like that dumb. He's not like his, you know, Don Jr. level dumb.
We know exactly how much money he has due and owing there and how much he's expecting to get. We probably wouldn't know on that level of detail, but this is why you should have more oversight and more insight into his finances and not less. At a minimum, we should have his tax returns, but we need more than that to actually know who and what Trump's financial interests are. Like, again, this is not hypothetical. Like, there are definitely people in Venezuela who owed that Trump Tower lots of money. And I feel like knowing who they are will be pretty important as we're putting sanctions on people and starting coups there.
Or for some reason, but I mean, I know you're getting that, Susan, but I just don't feel like that's going to be in Trump's tax returns.
One, at minimum, the exact financial amounts involved will be light shed on there. This is not saying that the tax return won't fix everything, but it'll fix a lot of
it. No, I know. I mean, the thing is, we may not get any answers when it comes to the tax returns because they could be squeaky clean, or
I will bet you lots of money.
Well, that's the thing is like, and that's the thing about the Trump presidency is that like he acts a certain way to make him look guilty of pretty much everything, and you know, there's this running joke that Trump will never recover from a particular thing, like because it's so funny how like he just slips out of every single. Whatever he gets himself into, he just somehow gets out of it untethered, untarred.
He doesn't slip out of it so much as he changes the norms of people around him.
That's how he does it.
Yeah, it's more like he makes his corruption normal and forces others to accept it.
Yeah, he's not Houdini. He's like a sledgehammer that destroys it. And, you know, and the thing is this, we're probably never going to get his tax returns, even though we should. But again, it becomes a narrative war, right? Because, you know, like you said, Suraj, it's like Trump's going to be like, oh, they're just on a witch hunt. But then the rest of Americans would be like, well, every single president since Nixon, Republican or Democrat, has done this. What are you hiding? And why are you going to such, you know, extreme lengths to hide what could be potentially very damaging information? And by the way, what about Deutsche Bank? And by the way, what about Venezuela? And by the way, you know, X, Y, and Z. And so I think, again, Democrats should keep doing it. They probably won't get it. But it does. It just only hurts him. Yeah. I think it only hurts him leading to 2020.
This is not a fight that can hurt the Democrats. They can only win here. We'll be back next week to discuss more on, hopefully not more on Iran, but more on how the congressional oversight issues evolve, because this is definitely not the end of the story. And it looks like we're going to have some big legal fights going into 2020 election over what Trump actually has to do to obey rule of law in this country.
A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. And you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is @45thpod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.